Thank you, Gary, for inviting me to do this. I really appreciate the opportunity. It's a little bit difficult to find new issues in immigration only because there are so many. Winding this down into 12 minutes was an interesting challenge for me, and I'm hoping that I will be able to touch on some of the major thinkings at this time. So just in keeping with our theme of this conference, I wanted to, as I shape my own thoughts, think about what were the issues through the lifespan? How does immigration generation impact that? What is the health status upon arrival? What happens as you age in this country if you're an immigrant? What are some of the issues of the second generation? Because people have families here, and that is actually probably one of the most important areas with respect to immigration policy in this country. And then finally, just a word about youth. So there are 37 million immigrants in this country, and this is a slide from the grant makers concerned with immigrants and refugees that show how they break out in the U.S. right now. It's about a third, around 10 million undocumented, 10 million lawful permanent residents, 10 million naturalized citizens. So there's a big range of where people come from. It's not just any one small group or really large group that is impacting the health of immigrants. They're a very broad group of people. This slide is from the census, and it shows the immigration pattern for a 10-year period. And unfortunately, I didn't write down the 10-year period, but I think it makes the point that the most significant immigration in this country in recent years has been from Mexico. In terms of unauthorized residents, people who have come here who come without papers and stay. Again, Mexico is a primary contributor, with this number being approximately 11.5 million Department of Homeland Security figures, which I'm going to hope are reasonably accurate. Two-thirds from Mexico and less than 5% Guatemala, Honduras, China, Philippines, India, Korea, Ecuador, Vietnam, with 16% being from other countries, a number of which are European countries. Where do they go? That might be one of the most interesting parts of what has happened in the last few years. They go everywhere. They go everywhere. And it's important to note that there has been very significant growth, not only Texas and California, but Georgia, Alabama, Nebraska, Iowa, Kansas, and that new Hispanic growth has been most significant in the South, with the populations doubling in Tennessee, Arkansas, and North Carolina in the 10-year period studied, which would be 2000 to 2010. Now, it's a little hard to get all the detail out of this slide, but I recommend anybody who's interested in looking at growth patterns and where people go to look at the Migratory Policy Institute. They had quite a wonderful wealth of information on patterns. So where are they working? Well, it was interesting to see that both on the high end of education and on the lower economic end, there's very significant contribution to the U.S. economy. First of all, in the high end, 27% of the growths of doctors and other professionals are immigrants in this country. And on the lower end, there's a broad group of occupations into which immigrants land, with farming, fishing, and forestry being the largest number, but followed closely with building and maintenance work, food preparation, construction, and mining. These are dangerous jobs. I think one of the areas that we don't think enough about is the contribution of immigrants to the business environment. There are 41 million minority-owned businesses in 2006, according to the Department of Commerce, where the U.S. growth in small businesses is 10%. Latino businesses grew by 24%, by 31%, and Asian businesses grew by 24%. I don't think we think enough about this, but it's a challenge and an opportunity. A lot of the small business growth in this country, particularly in immigrant communities, is in the food business. The food business is something that public health workers definitely have out there as one of the areas where we can make the most impact in terms of prevention. We're talking about people who sell food, the small markets, we're talking about bodegas, we're talking about corner stores, we're talking about restaurants. And there's been a very interesting movement to help small business owners to develop their product line along the lines of a product that is healthier for their communities. People like to think of their businesses as contributing. They like to think of their businesses as creating not health hazard, but rather more community and more opportunity for others around them. And this is something we don't think about perhaps as often in public health as we might. And I urge you to think about that as one of the opportunities. People are healthiest when they first arrive. People come to this country to work. They're the ones who can forge all of the challenges that are before them. And when they get here, they're the healthiest they're going to be in their lives. As they get here with lower income status, lower access to prevention, more exposure to hazardous conditions, their health degrades, and studies everywhere show that. One of the interesting challenges for people in public health is to study the issues of work hazards. There's a lot of literature on hazardous work conditions, on injury, on mortality, but very few of the studies that are out there really pay attention or really document citizenship status. And we know for many reasons that's really very important. And one of the things that makes that most important is the fact that there have been, because of the shifts in the economy, there have been so many ways in which immigrants have been put in situations where they have less and less control of where they work. They're working through intermediaries. If an injury happens on the job and an intermediary has arranged the work situation, the data about what happens to that person, to that worker, is very often lost. So there are few worker protections for this population, day workers. There's no intermediary there at all. There's no way to track somebody who's injured on the job. There's no way to document the nature, the extent, and whether that injury is life-threatening. So we really don't know very much about the status of injuries to workers. The healthiest people who come here to work are in a situation where we cannot document what happens to them after they come here and start to work. Aging is another interesting challenge because of the increasing burden of chronic disease and the economic status in which people who work in low-wage jobs find themselves in. And we have few statistics on this. There are a few studies that really show what's the health status of the aging immigrant. So what are the issues for immigrants and their families? First of all, the chronic disease burden is huge, and it gets greater with the second and the third generation. A very interesting study in Canada showed that even in the first generation, the longer somebody was in Canada, the faster and the more rapidly their BMI went up. Right there. Nice piece. Health coverage is a particularly interesting area. I'm going to leave Ellen to go into some of the details there, since I know you are planning to do that. But I will say a couple of things about it in a moment. Language, of course, is an issue. This is the best slide that I could find, which I thought was very, very useful in showing the issue of language proficiency, because language is certainly one of the issues that impacts one's ability to access meaningful health services and meaningful prevention, showing that nearly 30% of first generation do not speak English well or at all, and second generation, still very high numbers, 15%, not well or not at all. So the major issues going forward, patterns of immigration. We're now in a state where the net immigration of Latinos into the U.S. is at zero. And the new rising population are Asians. The numbers are still small, but they'll grow, and this is something that we need to keep in mind. The second is destinations. There's new growth in regions not accustomed to receiving new populations. There's little infrastructure to absorb and support new arrivals. And this places their health and well-being at risk. There's the language capacity issue from the last slide that I just showed you. Demographic pressures, the increasing importance of immigrants and their children defines what it means to be an American. In 2050, non-Hispanic whites will be in the minority in this country. There are risks to workers. And finally, there's the issue of civic participation. 13 states right now have restrictions to voting. These restrictions are intended for many purposes, but it's certainly newly eligible immigrant voters who feel the burden of those restrictions. Health coverage. Immigrant legislation in 1996 restricted immigrants for making them ineligible for federal means-tested public benefits until after 5 years of legal residence. And undocuments are not eligible. So this persists within ACA, and the children who come with their parents to this country, even if they're put in suspended status, that is, they're not forced to go back to their home country, they are ineligible right now as of this time for ACA benefits. Immigrants make this country work. They provide nourishment, shelter, care, advocating for their safety, health, education, and right to civic participation is a public health imperative. Thank you.